Recording in progress.
Good evening. I'm going to call this meeting's regular board meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Today is Wednesday, February 18th. As always, we start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask Mayor Jung to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening.
Welcome to circle. I may ask those who are able, right hand over your heart, repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United
States of America,
and to the
Republic, which
which
stands
one
one
nation
nation under
under
God,
God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for
indivisible.
all.
Madam Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Mezquite.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green. Director Jung.
Present.
Director Meeks.
Present.
Director Nguyen. Director Sheldon. Director Tran.
Here, present.
Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
You do have a quorum with seven directors present.
Great. Mr. Acting General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Great. Now's the time for visitor participation. If anyone would like to address the board on items that are not on the agenda and within our subject matter jurisdiction, now's the time. I see no one in the chambers, and I see no one online. So moving right along, that'll bring us to the consent calendar, which consists of items 1 through 26. Anybody like to pull an item?
Move consent, sir.
Second.
The agenda is moved and seconded. Just give me one moment. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Mezquite.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Jung.
Aye.
Director Meeks.
Yes.
Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with seven yes votes, with Directors Green, Nguyen, and Sheldon absent.
Great. That brings us to matters for consideration. Item 27, which is the general manager's compensation. Mr. Patel, do you want to handle this one, or would you like me to handle this one? Maybe I should handle it.
I would prefer you handle it.
Okay, understood. The board of directors recently provided the general manager a performance evaluation, and in closed session, I was given the authority to negotiate a salary increase with the general manager. Many factors were taken into consideration, including his performance and also market conditions. So the recommended action is to approve a 9% increase to the general manager's annual base salary, changing it from $359,029 to $391,342 effective retroactively to January 26, 2026, providing a $15,000 one-time bonus, continue the general manager's ability to participate in the deferred comp program with a matching contribution of up to $3,250, and continue a car allowance in the amount of $8,400 per year. And I should note that this is all being done very explicitly because it's required under the government code. I'm not looking to shame Mr. Kennedy this evening. So that is the recommended action. And I will go ahead and make a motion to approve the recommended action.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Director Mezquite?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Jung?
Aye.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director
Yes.
Wigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with seven yes votes, with Directors Green, Nguyen, and Sheldon absent.
Fantastic. That brings us to item number 28, which is the Orange County Sanitation District Biosolids Injection Update. Very exciting topic indeed.
Yes, President Bilodeau, we have Rob Thompson, General Manager, Orange County Sanitation District, who will give a update on two projects dealing with biosolids, their deep well injection project and supercritical water oxidation.
Fantastic. Mr. Thompson, you have the floor, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of Orange County Sanitation District, your valued partner across the way in water reclamation. So for those of you that aren't aware, we are OC San. We service 2.6 million people, receiving about 185 million gallons a day from Seal Beach to La Habra, around to Yorba Linda, and then down the backside of Irvine and Newport Beach. So very large service area, 479 square miles, with two main reclamation plants here in Fountain Valley, as you're aware, and in Huntington Beach. Both of them are connected to the GWRS reclamation system. We also have a beautiful new headquarters. For those of you that haven't had a chance, we welcome you for a tour at your convenience. So I'll keep moving along. We have nailed water reclamation through our partnership with Orange County Water District. We receive what I'll call highly enriched water from our residential customers, from our commercial and industrial customers, as well as dry weather urban runoff. All of that water is reclaimable flow. It can come either to plant one or plant two. We treat it to our secondary standards. That water could be disposed of to the Pacific Ocean through our outfall system. We make it available to Orange County Water District. They do their magic with GWRS, three levels of treatment, make indirect potable reuse, as you're all painfully aware, goes in the aquifer, and the water goes round and round. It's a world-leading system. We do a great job of water. What I'm really here to talk to you more about is what we're doing with the solids, that enrichment part that I talked about earlier. I will draw your attention to the non-reclaimable flows. It's a big part of what we do also. We receive flow from the Inland Empire brine line. We keep salts and other, let's say, nutrients, nitrates, other things like that, that might be attributable to the Santa Ana River, which would end up in Orange County's drinking water. We divert that about 11 million gallons a day through our treatment plants at Plant 2. It never mingles with the reclaimable flow. It gets treated and discharged to the ocean. So that's another piece of the water cycle that also protects Orange County's drinking water. But if you look out on the end, you have the agricultural reuse piece. We take all of those added components that people put in their water when they use it. We separate them out. Those solids are treated in our anaerobic digesters. We actually destroy 65% of those solids, turn them into gas. That gas we use in our power plant. We make about 11 megawatts a day for our own reuse, making heat also for our digestion system. It's a great cycle. The 35% of the solids that are left over, about 550 tons a day, we use for agricultural reuse. It's either sent to Yuma, Arizona for direct land app, about 45% or so on average. The balance is sent to the Central Valley via Kern County or San Bernardino County. It's composted usually with some green waste and used as a bulk farm fertilizer. It's a great loop. It's been working for years. No complaints, but regulation moves. As you are all aware, PFAS is everywhere. Biosolids tend to like PFAS. So if you have parts per trillion PFAS in the water coming to us, you will have the same number of parts per billion that are found in the biosolids. So long term, that concentration poses a problem for farm reuse. There are already agricultural bans across the country, state by state. A lot of pressure is being applied. Even Texas is considering making land app illegal. So we are looking forward to what we can do with our biosolids in addition to farm or agricultural reuse. We're also looking at microplastics being a long-term problem. They were probably a bigger problem about 6 or 7 years ago. They've kind of paled, but I believe they will be coming back on people's radar as far as putting those microplastics on farmland. The production of methane itself is becoming problematic. It's seen as a greenhouse gas. It is, depending on the literature you read, from 35 to 200 times more powerful than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. Even The Southern California Gas Company is looking to move away from methane and move to hydrogen. And if that doesn't scare you as a methane user, nothing should. We also have issues with electric truck hauling. If we're forced to move to electric trucks, trying to do 550 tons a day in 25 semi trucks with a 400 mile round trip is a problem for electric trucks. So, what we've done to step back is say at OC San, what do we want to become? You never just stay static in what you're doing. So, we have a strategic plan developed through our board of directors, which looks at all of these areas that I've talked about and more and says, what do we want to become? So, there are 16 papers that have been written within that strategic plan for all the different aspects of what we do, what would affect OCWD. For instance, we have a policy on water reuse, we have a policy on urban runoff and how we take that for the benefit of water reuse as well as the environment. There are papers on our financial dealings, on biosolids, constituents of emerging concern. All of those areas lay out what we want to become and lay out the policy for what we should pursue. Couple that with our asset management plan, which we update on an annual basis, and we know what we want to become and we know the condition of our facilities. We've also looked at the bigger picture for our collection system capacity. Are we going to be able to flow enough water? We're looking at climate resilience. What are we doing, especially to protect ourselves from flood, wet weather conditions, sea level rise, tsunamis, wildfires? So we have a plan to go through all of our systems and update all of our plants to meet not only asset management, wear and tear, obsolescence, those sorts of things, but also to meet the new challenges, including with our master plan and biosolids master plan, concerns about PFAS, microplastics, and methane. What that asset management plan looks like is basically this. We look at each of the areas of our two treatment plants and all of our collection system and say, how much useful life is remaining? And this is an overview of the areas of the treatment plant. If you see red, that means there's less than 5 years of life. You say, Rob, there's some pretty big red spots. Yes, and there's also some pretty big projects that are ongoing. So that big old blob of red you see at plant one in the upper right-hand corner, that is our headworks. And we're in the middle of a $220 million renewal of that headworks, where we're dealing with all aspects of that facility, from obsolescence to wear and tear items to regulatory requirements, technology opportunities, capacity issues. When we're done with that facility, it'll be completely renewed and good for another 25 years. And we'll move on to the next area, which is in design, which are three primary basins you see adjacent to it. So having that long-term plan gives us the ability to look forward. What I don't want to do is do research on things that are red. I also don't want to do too much research on things that are orange because I'm already starting design for those areas of the plant. What I'm looking for are things with 10 to 15 years of life left. That's where I should be looking at research. Are there technical or technological opportunities that allow me to change the process? And for me, that's digestion and solids handling. You see those areas outlined in yellow. So if we're going to look forward 15 years and say our current way of handling solids could be at risk, it could be changed by regulatory change or worse, legislative change if the legislature decides to act and make land application of biosolids illegal, like it did for landfill disposal, we need more options. So there's two options we're looking at. You can see them on the edge: supercritical water oxidation and deep well injection. And I'll talk about what we're doing to test those waters. So first, what is supercritical water? Supercritical water is the fourth state of water. For those of you that had junior high science, you remember that there is ice, there is liquid water, there is steam or vapor. There is a fourth state. It's called supercritical water. Above 3200 PSI, above 374 degrees Celsius, water's properties change. Suddenly, oil and water mix. Water is no longer a universal solvent. So, what's cool about that is water can become a catalyst. If I can put oxygen next to my organic compounds that are my solids, and I can mix them well, then I'm going to disassociate all of those organics and oxidize them. So I can burn wet sludge. That is the holy grail of my industry. If you can burn wet sludge, if you don't have to dry it, then you can make a jet engine and run that jet engine on sludge. Here's how it works. You simply get an air compressor, moving part number one. The air compressor compresses air, regular old ambient air, which we have lots of, up to about 3,500 to 4,000 PSI. It's not a heavy lift. You can go down to Home Depot and get yourself a 4,000 PSI pressure washer for a couple hundred bucks. You superheat that air with the heat from this reactor. By burning sludge, you will make heat the same way if you burn gasoline or diesel, you make heat for an engine. So you take superheated air and you mix it with either sludge or biosolids or food waste or whatever you want. It's a fuel. You heat it up a little, but not to the supercritical phase. And at this pipe joint, you mix superheated air and warm sludge. The water that's in the sludge goes supercritical, gives you perfect mixing, and in a second or two, all of your biosolids are consumed and you're left with carbon dioxide, water, nitrogen, and salts. We're not splitting atoms, so whatever was in that biosolids has to be converted to some sort of other chemical, and it's going to go to its lowest state. So it's basically burning sludge without drying it. So what happens at this stage, you have a couple of these injection points, but the reactor converts all of that fuel to heat and those benign chemicals I was talking about. You start stripping away that heat by superheating the air that's coming in to power it. You separate the liquids from the air by dropping the pressure. So you start to get steam. Long term, it'll spin a steam turbine, is the idea. In the short term, it may just be converted to a heat exchanger and make more steam that you can run through a steam turbine. But in the end, you'll have a vapor coming off, vented gas, and you will have water that has some dissolved minerals in it. This is what the unit looks like currently. It's in Orlando being tested. So this is Orlando's finest. This is raw sludge. They don't digest. So they have dewatered their sludge. That's going to go for farm application in Florida. We intercept some of that. They're mixing it down to make a slurry, about 16% solids. This stuff goes in and this stuff comes out. If you look closely, you can see the sandy material kind of on the bottom of the flask. If there's silica or there's sand in there, you're not going to burn it. You're not going to convert it. You're just going to clean it. You'll end up with clean sand. If iron is in there because they use ferric chloride, anything like that, it's going to precipitate out as a benign chemical. So phosphates, calciums, magnesiums, all in there. This is what the effluent looks like when the unit's running. It's literally just a dryer vent from Home Depot for their test. And the air is coming out. This is what the water looks like as it comes out. The sludge fed in, you can see there's a little beige tint. Those are the minerals that are left in there. Perfectly clean water from a biological standpoint. Because of the temperature and pressure, nothing has survived. All of the bacteria, all the viruses completely destroyed, turned into their elemental pieces. It is in factory testing. They've made a couple of big innovative steps forward. They continue to deal with the trouble that comes with the changing of water's properties from being a universal solvent to supercritical, then back to a universal solvent. Things start to drop out and plate and scale. So they're working through just the parts and pieces to make their heat exchangers work. But the physics works just fine. They've used it for Department of Defense testing to treat AFFF firefighting foam, which is parts per thousand PFAS. they're getting 6 log removal of PFAS. So it's very, very effective at that temperature and pressure, breaking the carbon fluorine bonds. No crazy acids are formed. I hear that a lot. There's so many buffers for the minerals that you end up with mostly calcium fluoride when the PFAS breaks up. So carbon dioxide for the carbons, calcium fluoride for the fluorines. The other opportunity we're looking at is actually a little more tried and true. It's deep well injection. Deep well injection has a lot of promise. It's from a technology standpoint, it's very pedestrian. It's something that's been done across the globe for more than 100 years. It has an opportunity to sequester massive amounts of carbon. I'll talk a little bit more about that. The treatment costs are much, much lower. OC Sen will be able to turn off its centrifuge facility, its truck hauling facility, not only more environmentally beneficial, but cheaper. That's, again, a holy grail object for us. Another issue is it becomes a forever home for forever chemicals. So when you talk about PFAS or microplastics being a problem on farmland, by putting them 5,000 feet down, they will no longer become part of the discussion. As you're all aware, more than I, as you pass through the aquifer and move down, you will have sand and gravel, clay layers, sand and gravel, clay layers throughout the aquifer system. As you get deeper, those clay layers become shale, the sand layers become sandstone. So shale, sandstone, shale, sandstone, shale, sandstone. The idea is those impermeable layers allow you to have the zones toward the bottom where you get a place where you can turn sandstone back into sand and gravel by fracking and then inject biosolids. Biosolids long-term will be digested. It's nothing more than a thermophilic digester. It's about 135 degrees. Biology will go to work, turn the biosolids long-term into carbon dioxide and methane. We aren't the first. City of LA is doing this. We studied it with them back in 2008. We decided not to go forward in discussions with you, Orange County Water District. It was a pretty difficult sales pitch to say, GWRS is just starting. Water's going to go in the ground over here, biosolids will go in the ground over there, and everything will work. We think 20-something years later, 18 years later, it's an easier sell, especially with the track record of success by the City of LA. So they are operating a system, again, since 2008. Trucks from Hyperion can come up. They back up to this pit. They can put biosolids from Hyperion in here, or they can take solids directly from their terminal island treatment plant. They run them through this screen here, number two. They pump across to a Baker tank, which goes to two injection pumps, and then a monitoring well and an injection well here, and then their little office. What it looks like, super simple. It's a piece of pipe that goes in the ground, shown here as the well. These are the oil field pumps. They're standard oil field pumps used across Texas, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, around the world. So what that looks like here in Orange County, based on the well information that we have from all the dry holes that have been drilled around Fountain Valley, as you go down through time, through the geological layers and the epochs in the past, you pass all, as I was saying, these confining shale layers and get into the sandstone that we're going to shoot for here at R2, R3, more than 5,000 feet deep. We will drill down, directionally drill out to get some separation, and then have two wells, one active and one recovering, and you transfer them on a regular basis. So pressure will build up. You'll turn it off, flush it out, go to the other well, hit it with some pressure so you break open the sandstone. You pump in your biosolids till the pressure builds. You turn it off. You go back to the other unit. The digestion is occurring, so all the solids that you've deposited are turning into gas, and that gas is naturally moving out from the ejection site. I'll show you what that zone of influence looks like. So the pressures, while they may sound high, in the normal industry, those are not crazy or exotic materials. Those are standard oil field ideas. We're talking about 1,000 GPM, about a million gallons a day, a really small number. I'll remind you, your own barrier system can do 30 MGD. So a very small layer. We're talking about injection zones that are outside of your own barrier wall system. So the concern always comes up about earthquakes. We're not fracking bedrock. We're breaking sandstone in these sediment layers that are under our plant. There is very little risk of any seismicity. LA isn't exactly the same sort of system just north of us on the same Newport Inglewood fault. They've had no issues, nothing to even record. That zone of influence I talked about is these magenta circles. They're two concentric circles. So we intend to drill the wells near our primary basins here at plant one and directionally drill them out toward the edges of our plant. What it looks like in 3D is right here, where they come out and there's a separation between them. There's an A and a B, one active, one standby, and then you just swap them back and forth. This is the extent of the spread of the gas and water over a 50-year period. So it's a really small footprint, again, because you have a few hundred feet in that huge volume for that gas and water to dissipate. We are actively pursuing the project. We have made contact with EPA. EPA is actually very excited about this. It is a benefit for the air because you're taking all those trucks off the road. It's a benefit for nutrients because one of the biggest nitrogen loads we have is the centrifuge centrate. Not putting that back into the treatment system means there's less nitrogen load going to the ocean as we put that in our non-reclaimable flow cycles. So there's a benefit for the air. There's a benefit for the ocean environment. There are carbon sequestration benefits. If we were to put all of our biosolids in, it's more than 230,000 tons per year of carbon equivalent. Those rights are very valuable. In fact, City of LA, through their consultant contractor, has sold those rights to Microsoft. It's an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal back in July, if you're interested. That will help offset some of the cost. The Regional Water Quality Control Board is fully supportive, as is the Air Board. We actually got an expedited air permit. I'm sorry, that was for SQUO, not for this. But this is a sealed system. There should be no emissions at all to the air. It'll reduce odors to the neighborhoods because there'll be less trucks hauling solids. It's just a very positive environmental and economic outcome. We have finished our study work. We're heading off to community engagement, just like GWRS went full court press into education when we were talking about reuse of sewage to make drinking water. We'll be doing the same sort of community engagement to make sure the public understands all the benefits of this system, the safety, and that when you put this 5,000 feet down under many layers of rock, it is a safe and effective way of, sorry, handling the waste. Permitting is on target. We're moving forward with the EPA. Again, they're very supportive. And from a design perspective, we're moving forward with a progressive design build proposal that should be on the street in the next few months. So big push, community outreach, education number one. This is one of the first steps. I'm hitting the circuit, making sure everyone knows what we're doing. We're trying to do this as openly and as transparently as possible so everyone understands what we're doing and why we're doing it. We believe that this early engagement using the GWRS model is the way to go. We should be done by 2031. Those are all the steps. There's no way to make this go much faster. Everything has to be done in a serial fashion. You can't really do anything about permitting until you have the wells. You can't do any design till you have the wells to know exactly how the system's going to be is going to work, and to make sure we have the proper geologic data. So the soonest we think we can get this done, and what we're planning for, is August of 2031. These are the next steps, so I've kind of already talked about. So the bottom line for us is we're looking forward. We are all going to have a big problem if OC San and this industry doesn't find something to do with biosolids that have microplastics, that have PFAS. It is a huge problem for our side of the water industry. It is the item that will take up most of the time at NACWA, the National Association of Clean Water Agencies, and CASA, because there are a lot of agencies with a lot of biosolids that can't put it in landfills anymore. That's against state law. And if we lose land application, we're going to need someplace to put them. If we get restricted on PFAS, it sounds ominous when I say it this way. We all get limited on PFAS. So we need an outlet, either destruction and or sequestration, or we're going to have to all treat for PFAS. So we're trying to be proactive. We're trying to not get ourselves put in a corner. And we think these are two great ways to do it and actually save money. With that, I can answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Mr. Thompson?
So, when you're putting this back into the ground, it's at a fairly high pressure. What safeguards are going to be in place to make sure there's not a breach at a higher elevation that could then impact our water supply?
So the well design is basically a triple bore design where you have an outer casing, an inner casing, and then the actual pipe that goes down. And you're constantly monitoring the two annular spaces between. If there's any water in those spaces, then you know there's been a leak one side or the other, and you fix it. You stop injection, and you fix that annular.
Okay, thank you.
Great question. Are there any questions online?
Directors Tran and Yeo.
Okay, how about
Yes.
Director Tran? Please go ahead.
Yes, this is Tran. Thank you so much for the presentation, Mr. Thompson. What contingencies do we have if there's a backup, like an overflow? Simply put, like a toilet backup or a faucet backup.
So we have this issue now, basically, because we're running systems that are pumping solids all over our plant. Believe me, backups are something sanitation districts know a whole lot about. So our job is to make sure that we have multiple outlets. I think long term, we will talk about an inter-plant transfer line. My long-term vision is that there will be deep well injection at plant number one and supercritical water oxidation at plant number two. Plant number two is not a good candidate geologically for deep well injection. There are way too many existing wells drilled in the 1920s and 30s for oil exploration reasons that were not properly abandoned. So we will still have three outlets, hopefully, agricultural reuse, supercritical water oxidation, and deep well injection, so that if there's a problem with any of those technologies, whether it's by regulatory reason or some situation like maybe an earthquake, we'll have more options to keep moving solids.
Very good. In terms of the biosolids, is there a smell component? Would the neighbors be able to not sense or smell
Right now, there
their
are
own?
smell components with certain neighbors, they will tell you. We know them by name. They know us by name. They call in when trucks are being loaded sometimes, when the wind isn't favorable, when trucks are leaving. Those are the areas where we get the most odor complaints. Everything else is covered and scrubbed. So the dewatering process is an enclosed system. Everything that I've talked about here would also be basically an enclosed system with air scrubbing. So this will be less odorous to do either deep well injection because there's no opening to the atmosphere, or with supercritical water oxidation, again, there's no opening to the atmosphere. They're sealed systems and the destruction is complete. What we're doing now has more impact than what we're trying to move to.
Last question, if I may. In terms of capacity, how much injection can OC San put the inject the biosolids underground? There has to be some sort of a limit, or is there's no limit? I don't know if you understand the question. Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
I think our audio got muted. I saw a message come across.
I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yes, so let me
Yes.
answer your question one more time. You asked
Well, the
how long can we store biosolids or inject biosolids?
yes, the capacity
Okay. If
for
we
this
were to drill
project.
4 wells, we believe we can get 54 years of storage in those R2, R3 layers. If we just stay with the 2 wells, it'll be somewhere between 14 and 24 years.
All right, very well. Thank you.
Then we had Director Yeo.
Yes, thank you, President Bilodeau. Rob, thank you for the presentation. You may have already answered a question. I was going to say the proposed injection sites, are they in within your campus?
The injection sites are, but the footprint does extend a little beyond.
And then you mentioned that Plan 2 is not favorable for installing the injection wells, right?
Correct, because it's a pincushion of old oil wells from the 1920s, 1930s.
I see. Thank you. Because in one of your slides, it shows that the LA site is near the Vincent Thomas Bridge. So I thought maybe somewhere coastal would be more favorable because, it's if there's a leak, it leaks into the area that's that there's no production wells. But I imagine that whatever we or you decide to embark on is going to be 100% safe.
That is, we wouldn't even be considering it if it put our partnership and the water reclamation in any jeopardy.
All right. Thank you very much.
There any other hands raised online? Okay, Mr. Thompson, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
That brings us to the SAPA update. I did participate in the SAPA meeting, and the big event was we're putting out an RFP for a security fence around the facility. So, anybody here knows anything about fencing? Please inquire. That brings us to item 30, which is the water resources summary.
Information's in the packet, but we'd be happy to answer any questions if you had any.
Great. And I know that you had sent us an email about Prado Dam, and you have any highlights, maybe how much water we have behind there?
Yeah, under GM's report, I had a couple items to.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to steal your thunder. Okay. That brings us to the committees and conference reports. The Communications Committee, Chair Tran.
Information's in the packet.
The Water
Happy
Issues
to.
Committee, Chair Green.
Information is in the packet.
Great. And the Admin and Finance Committee, Chair Yeo.
Yes, the information's in the packet.
Fantastic. Are there any reports on committees, conferences, meetings attended at district expense? Anybody would like to report on? Hearing none, that brings us to verbal reports. President's report, just happy that we have another rain cycle. That's great news for us. That brings us to the general manager's report.
Yes, President Bilodeau, just a couple of quick items.
So as you know, OCWD has been a supporter of the City of Westminster's TET Parade. So this year's TET Parade is scheduled for Saturday, February 21st at 9:30 a.m. And so far, we have Directors Tran, Nguyen, and Jung scheduled to participate in the parade and the procession. And as with last year, it'll feature some OCWD vehicles, banners, and some other decorative elements. And the event is expected to attract more about 20,000 in-person attendees. Hopefully, the weather holds out for that. And as much as 250,000 international viewers through multiple streaming platforms. And so, as you know, the City of Westminster is located within our service area. So we've been supporting this event every year. And if there's any other directors interested in participating in the parade and our procession, just let me know and we can have that arranged. And then the second item, as you've mentioned before, we did get two big rain events, especially on Monday, parts of Tuesday, and into Tuesday night. So yesterday's rain event was about a little under a half inch. We have 14.8 inches to date. Our normal to date would be 9.32, so well above our precipitation to date and basically at our yearly average already. And we have little under 16,000, 15,800 acre feet in storage behind Prado. And we're at about elevation 503 currently. And the inflow is still about 1,600 CFS and the outflow 310, although we are at about 96% full. But we're going to try to match, the outflow with our percolation and hopefully free up some storage. But we'll see because there is some. An additional event forecast for this week that could be up to another half inch, but it's still a good news story. But we have a quite a good pool going behind Prado, and quite a bit has been captured to date. And that was it.
Thank you for the report. Are there any directors' reports? Seeing and hearing none, the general counsel's report, if any.
Very brief, only that at the March 4th board meeting, I will be providing an update on doing your Form 700. So I imagine it's going to be standing room only, so get here early. And thank you very much. No closed sessions.
Great. So we have our last item, which is our meeting adjournment. And I would like to adjourn this meeting in remembrance of our former board member, Larry Kramer Jr., who passed away recently. Larry was an Orange County Water District board member from 1977 to 2004, representing Division III. Larry took great pleasure in helping drive decades of progress, sustainable water management initiatives for the greater community. May he rest in peace. Thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned.